Roundabout with Tony Barnfield.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
And joining me now are a couple of young men from Selwyn College. They're both natural sciences students, and they've got themselves into an international aerospace competition. It's run by Airbus, I think. Billy Hayes.
Yes, for the Airbus Fly Your Ideas competition, which is a biannual competition run to try and determine solutions to current problems plaguing the aerospace industry.
Right, and are there big prizes to be won?
Oh, well, yeah, certainly. I mean, there's a €45,000 prize fund, I believe. And of course, as a finalist, we get the experience of being flown to France and having access to the Airbus laboratories to work on our prototype.
Right. And Peter, how did you get involved with the team, which I think is called, is it Seren?
Yes, that's right. It's Welsh for star, I believe.
Yeah.
Billy's idea.
So the star of the team is Billy, who's obviously influenced this because you've come from North Wales, don't you?
Yes, yeah. So I wanted to bring a bit of an influence of that into the project because, I mean, North Wales isn't the most recognised of regions in the world.
I thought it was going to be serendipity, you see.
No.
So, Peter, the team's called Seren.
Yes.
And there are three of you. We've got two of you here. So who's the other team member?
It's someone we know from Keys. He's also a natural sciences student, Liam Lau. He's a second-year physicist, and he's helping us out with the maths.
And now let's just listen to a little bit of how the competition works.
Space, the final frontier. But we're beginning to conquer it. As our spacecraft fly further out, they face a growing problem of how to generate power. Solar cells are effective in Earth orbit, but light intensity decays with the square of orbital radius. Jupiter's sunlight is just 4% the strength of ours, so current missions have giant solar arrays to gather enough sunlight, a huge mass penalty. In the past, we powered our probes with RTGs, using the heat from radioactive plutonium to generate electricity, although this power will decay over time. The world's also running out of plutonium, with more being too costly to produce, and a nuclear launch failure could be catastrophic.
We believe there's a better way. Our solar windmill is an efficient
and sustainable... So, I've got you two here. Tell me, what is the better way of solving that?
I think the trouble is, with the way we often think about solving problems in aerospace, is we limit ourselves to what we have access to on Earth. But the thing is, for solutions to problems in space, we have an entirely different array of potential to look at. And so we're tapping into a type of energy that can only be found in space, being that radiation that's trapped by planetary magnetic fields.
And so this is a solar windmill. Peter, you've got a lot of facts and figures there.
So I do,
explain
yes.
that title, because it almost sounds contradictory.
Sort of, yes. It's not a windmill in the sense that there's moving parts. It relies on particles that originally were radiating out of the sun, the solar wind, and they've been captured by magnetic fields. And then our machine, or our generator, has two spheres, and they can separate out the particles that are in these magnetic fields and extract the energy from them. So all of the positive particles, like the protons, go through to the centre of the generator. So that gets a positive charge. And then on the outside, then all of the charge can leak away. You have things like electrons colliding with it. And so you build up this voltage between the inner sphere and the outer sphere. And that's what you can use to get power for your spacecraft.
Is it going to work?
Well, I mean, I think the numbers speak for themselves, really. I mean, unfortunately, we haven't been able to test this on Earth. We don't have access to plasmas and such. A big reason for why the idea came to me is because we often get problems related to these radiation fields, where when NASA, for instance, sends up satellites through the radiation belts, what you end up happening is these large discharges of electricity that originate from these charged particles. So this process happens, and we know it happens, and we've seen it happen. We just want to optimize it.
Yeah, we want to turn a potential problem with space exploration into a benefit.
And do you think that's why they've selected you for the final?
Perhaps.
I mean, it's a clever way to turn things around, isn't it?
Well, I'd like to think so. I think that if we looked at a lot of things that way, we might find there's a lot more solutions out there than we realise.
And I've got, you've just passed me all these bits of paper here with details, so I've got what this solar windmill might be like. With insulating struts, an antenna dish, thin outer shell. How would you compare it to visualise it for somebody?
It's sort of like just a sphere that would surround the spacecraft, just a shell for it, so to speak. And then you have, you know, your scientific instruments will either be inside or protrude out through some kind of insulated wiring.
And have you really thought it all the way through?
We've done some maths. Obviously, we can't know for sure until we launch it into space, which is obviously a little bit beyond our, our budget at the moment. Maybe if we win the money, then we'll be able to do something a bit more adventurous. But yeah, so far, looking at all of these papers about previous incidents that have happened because of these sort of effects, and we've done some calculations to try and work out what the radiation flux will be and how much power we can hope to extract from it. And we've worked out that around Earth, it's not the best because we don't have very strong radiation belts. When you go out to somewhere like Jupiter, we can get up to about 10 times the amount of power that a solar panel would be able to produce, which is of the same weight. So it's quite a significant improvement for spacecraft going out that far.
And do you see any other potential uses for it, or is it really just limited to that particular situation?
Well, for the time being, it's certainly best suited to sort of deep space exploration in terms of exploring potential for life signs around Jovian moons and such. But if you think in the long term, in terms of future impact, you could have something similar to the Dyson Sphere, which was big in the science news a few years back when we caught some glimpses of flashes around a star, where we could surround a planet like Jupiter in lots of these small solar windmills, sort of like a wind farm on Earth, and then beam the energy generated there back to, say, the Earth to help with our power needs via microwaves, or back to mining missions in the asteroid belt. And the nice thing about the solar windmill is it's much cheaper than solar panels, so it would be better suited to that sort of thing. And it's also, in a way, a type of renewable energy, because in the end, all of the energy that's generated is from particles that are emanated from the sun.
Fascinating. What does your department think about it in natural sciences?
Oh, well, the department haven't known terribly much about it thus far because we've had to keep a lot of it quite secret. In the beginning, we weren't sure that if we were going to get as far as we were, and once we got as far as we did, we had to keep it under wraps until the press releases were made.
So when does the final take place?
We'll be flying out to France on the 23rd of June, I believe, a week after the end of exam, so it'll be a nice way to celebrate.
I'm very much looking forward to it.
And this is, you actually go to the headquarters of Airbus, do you?
Yes, we'll be going straight to the heart of the Airbus headquarters. We'll get to use their equipment and everything. And then at the end of it, we'll have to give a 2-hour presentation on our project to a live audience and to a global live stream, I believe.
Good heavens.
Yeah,
I'm slightly worried about that. But
have you done anything like that before?
I've done a bit of public speaking in the past, but certainly not 2 hours to the world.
And has that got to have visuals and everything else, presumably?
Yes, yeah, I believe so. But thankfully, we have our visuals man over here, Peter. He's been wonderful so far.
Oh, yes. I've spent many an hour in Blender trying to work out how to model this thing and make it look nice.
So. Yes, well, it certainly does. And I can see it working, potentially. And what do your families think about this?
They don't really understand it, but they still think it will probably do well anyway. They've got faith in us.
My mum and dad, bless them, have been terribly proud and sharing the video everywhere and whatnot. But they're not scientists themselves, but they do like the odd bit of space. So who doesn't like the odd bit of space?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's intriguing. It's 50 years ago this year since we got a man on the moon, or America did. So it's very topical, really, this year, isn't it?
Yeah,
space.
Yeah, certainly. I think we're entering a space race 2.0, so to speak. I mean, with the introduction of private sector space really blowing up in terms of SpaceX and whatnot, I think we're seeing a new rush to new technologies and being able to push the boundaries. Now we're trying to put more men on the moon, I think America are, and pushing towards maybe getting men on Mars.
Not a very hospitable Mars.
No.
Well, with the rate that climate change is going, maybe it'll be our best option. We don't know.
Well, best wishes to Liam Lau, who couldn't be with us today. Billy Hayes, thank you very much, and Peter Methley.